parents didn't have appropriate relationships. Their responses to the environment were not really fully supportive or encouraging of health or resolution. And that their information sent to us from them about who we are, whether we were smart or pretty or not smart or not pretty and not able to do things and not able to earn things or not be worthy of things. And who do we think we are? These kind of the programs, when we get these programs in our subconscious, when we're not paying attention, those are the programs that are playing. So now we come to this very, very important conclusion. And it comes to this. We're not biological automatons controlled by genes where all of our programs are manifest at the moment of conception and the rest of our life is just playing out the programs of the genes. This is not true at all. That we are dynamic individuals, that we live in the world, and biological organisms are capable of adapting to almost any kind of environment. The reason why they're capable of adapting is they're not genetically programmed, that the programs of the genes can change and be modified by the experiences of the individual and the experiences offered by the environment. That through the perception of the living organism, the perception can adjust the biology. But while a single cell has very basic, simple perceptual abilities, a cell can see if calcium is there or histamine or estrogen. When we get to the level of a human, we have a brain filled with trillion cells that lies between the world that we see and experience and the internal world of our biology. The function of the brain is perception. It's to read the world and then adjust the biology. And why this becomes relevant is then we have a nervous system whose function is to learn the experiences of life, acquire perceptions, and then guide our biology and our health through the world as we grow and mature. And yet now we recognize that that nervous system has two parts, the subconscious and the conscious. We also recognize that the conscious is totally creative, yet the subconscious, the more powerful of the pair, is also the one that runs from 95 to 99% of the time. So our lives are actually the printout of the programs in our subconscious mind more than it is the printout of programs we would envision with our conscious mind. What's very interesting about that is, do we have to go back and find out who programmed what and where into us and relive all those experiences? And the answer is absolutely not. Because the message from all those messengers, the people who brought us the experiences are the messengers, the message is what's in the subconscious mind. While cognitive therapy has a tendency to go kill the messenger over the message, it's not relevant who the messengers were. It's not even relevant to go back and identify when and how they occurred. The simple reason is this. Because whatever we learned is operating present time out of the subconscious mind right now. And that our lives reflect the program in the subconscious mind. Well, we used to think of our deficits and the wants and needs and desires as being something we weren't able to obtain because we were more or less victims of the world and we just couldn't get there. The new understanding of biology says if there was any victimization, it occurred within the subconscious mind. It was not the universe. The universe will offer you anything. So the interesting reality is if you look at your life, you can already see the things you are missing generally reflect programs that won't allow you to get there, that your subconscious is already imbued with these programs of deficit. And so the interesting point is, okay, Bruce, you finally got me there. I got to see how I got programmed, and then I bought other people's beliefs, and that these other beliefs are running my life 95 to 99% of the time. But then you told me the program is a habit. It's a tape player, and talking to the tape player doesn't change it. Now the question very clearly is, what can I do in the circumstance when I realize that the programs that I'm employing are not providing the life that I would really like? How can I change the programs? And the interesting answer is there are many different ways to change the programs. But talking to your subconscious mind is not one of the ways because, as I said, no one is in there. So the interesting thing about talking to the subconscious mind is how can you get that information to be incorporated in the subconscious mind? What you actually have to do is a process that would be tantamount to pushing the record button on the tape player that's playing the tape. So as you push the record button, what you put in now is going to rewrite the program. Well, how can you re-record the program? At first, when I started to come upon this information, I actually had no idea how to record the program, and it used to be very upsetting because I'd close my lecture with this really wonderful mechanistic understanding that we are program devices and our lives reflect the programs. And then, of course, it was a big letdown for the audience because at the very end, the first question is, well, okay, tell me how to change the program. And I used to sort of back away saying, well, you know, I can tell you about how the program works. I'm not familiar with it. So there was one point when I was giving lectures about how if you understand this new biology, you can create a life that's the equivalent of living in heaven on this planet right now, something I firmly believe. And when I was giving this, I'd also noticed that the people in the audience were a little bit unsure and skeptical about my advice that this could happen, because they looked at me and they thought, for a guy who apparently knows all this stuff, your life doesn't look that great, Lipton. And that was when I started to realize that I would respond to them almost saying, and I'm glad I didn't say it, but essentially I said it, was, well, do as I say, not as I do. Because I realized at some point, it's like, well, I'm talking about how you can have a great life, and my life wasn't that great. And then all of a sudden it really dawned on me, said, my goodness, I have conscious awareness of all the mechanisms, but my subconscious is completely programmed by other beliefs than the ones I just acquired. And so even though I acquired all this new awareness, I'm still operating from the habitual tapes from my childhood. So I started to try to pay attention to what can I do about that. And I started listening to the voices that run through our heads when we're doing things. So, for example, when you're driving a car and let's say you come to the stoplight and you're waiting for the light, you can hear a dialogue going on in your head. Basically, it's tapes playing from the subconscious mind. And as psychologists tell us, about 70% or more of those tapes that are playing are negative and redundant. So when you get a moment, if you can hear some of those thoughts, just tune in every now and say, what am I thinking? Listen to them. Most of these kinds of thoughts are, oh, that will never work. Oh, that can't happen. Oh, I can't get that. These are almost all negating the things that we were looking for. And if you start to hear thoughts that are negating the direction you're going, then you'll have to recognize this, that powerful processor, that million times more powerful processor called the subconscious mind, operating 95 to 99% of the time with programs that say I won't get it, will actually end up providing me with things that I didn't want. Things that I couldn't get the things I wanted because my mind wouldn't even allow them to come in. So and as I started to listen to these, I started to recognize that in the process, I could actually hear something like a negative thing like, oh, well, that's not going to happen. And then I would consciously say, no, wait, that's not true. It can happen. I can get this. And I started to realize that if you become conscious of these thoughts, you can actually interact with them as they're being manifest and change them live time. Well, what happens is if you continuously do this process through something equivalent to habituation, you can lead to a rewriting of these codes. Now, but there's a problem with that. And that is, in the world that we live in, with so much activity and the speed of life that we go by, we really don't have at our fingertips the ease and comfort of sitting back to listen and communicate with our thoughts. So it's very hard to do this. This process I later found out was called Buddhist mindfulness, being mindful, being conscious all the time. And that alone is really where the power is for this simple reason. The conscious mind has all the wishes and aspirations and desires that you want for your life. If you stay conscious and stop daydreaming, stop thinking about the past and the future and be here now, then you are actually running the machine live with the intentions that you like. But the moment life starts to get busy and all of a sudden you start thinking about things and contemplating the past or the future, then you automatically start operating off of the mind that has the programs that do not support you. So Buddhist mindfulness is a way of getting there, but it's really difficult for most people to use that because of the time and the investment it takes to pay attention to your thoughts. So I later found there was another way that was very effective, and that would be clinical hypnosis. And the reason for why that is effective is simply is that that is the same state in which the subconscious was programmed originally. We were below alpha wave activity. We were in more or less theta wave activity, and theta is the hypnagogic trance. So I can go back into a hypnotic trance through a clinical hypnotherapist who can help me slow down my conscious thoughts, allow me to get into the hypnagogic state, and then reprogram the beliefs that were loaded into my subconscious mind. That is a very effective way as well. And lastly, there is now a whole variety of modalities that are collectively referred to as energy psychology. And the significance of energy psychology is that it's not cognitive therapy at all. It actually just deals with the energy in the field. It involves characteristics associated with superlearning, the ability to open up the brain and download information at rates of speed that are just phenomenal. And the relevance about all that is that using these varieties of different modalities of energy psychology, many of them have letters like EFT, TFT, EMDR, some of them are sort of body talk is one form, avatar is another, Psych-K is the one that I work with. These are a variety of modalities that allow us to impact the program in the subconscious using an energy process wherein we can change beliefs that have limited us our whole lives, 50, 60 years, change a belief in about 10 minutes or so and walk away a completely different person as a consequence of this. So basically what it really says is we start to get into a new understanding of who we really are. We are not the genes. We are not the physical body. We are the mind inside the system. The mind, via the perceptions, control every aspect of our biology, our behavior, and our genes. And that we must understand that if we experience problems in the world that we live in today, it's not because there's generally something wrong with us and our biology. It's almost inevitably associated with there's something wrong with our programming and our belief about who we are and why we are on this planet. Because if we begin to understand this nature, if we begin to understand that we can reprogram ourselves, we can free ourselves from the past, we can free ourselves from the limitation, we can change our health by changing our mind. I mean, the best example of something like that is consider the people who are laying on their deathbed, terminal cancer, everybody writing them off, thinking it's too late, they're gone. And all of a sudden this person gets up and says, I'm not buying this. I don't care about, if I only have a short time left, then I'm going out there and I'm going to live the life that I wanted to live, not the one that I was programmed to live. And it's interesting because these are the people, when they get up off of that deathbed and they actually change the style of their life, are the ones that express what is called a spontaneous remission. They change their perceptions change their biology. This is not an unusual thing. Many of you are actually very familiar with a pathology associated with that called multiple personalities. Interesting about multiple personalities, these are people that have a pathology in a sense where they actually switch from one personality into another personality. What's very interesting about this, while they are, of course, neurological switches that occur as they go from one personality to the other, almost every time there are also physiological and physical characteristics that switch at the very same time. That in personality A, they could have brown eyes, and in personality B, they can have gray eyes, and this changes in about a minute or so. That in personality A, they can have an anaphylactic response, let's say, to dogs. And then a minute later, when they switch into personality B, they could play in a whole pile of dogs and never have a problem with it. But you switch them right back to A, and then one dog will cause an anaphylactic response. And so basically what we recognize as people change their personality, they also accommodate the changes by changing their physiology and their physical selves as well. Well, this is a pathology and not a lot of people are interested in that, but how about real life issues like, actors? Actors are interesting in this regard because when they take on a character, they also acquire the personality to play the character. And the better the actor they are, the more the personality takes over their lives. Some actors can gain 40 pounds for a role, and then as soon as the role is over, lose 40 pounds. Some actors could be thin and frail and then play somebody like Cassius Clay in a movie, and the next time you see them, you see him and say, oh my God, look at the physical build on this guy. And then the last movie I saw him in, he was a skinny little rail. And all this came about from what reason? The ability to take on the personality, change the personality in their life, and operate their body from a different personality led to a different biology. All of these examples are very clear and positive examples of how the mind controls biology. This includes what we call the placebo effect. The placebo effect is a person is sick and is given a pill wherein the doctor says this is the newest, most effective pill for what you have. It's just out of the research labs. You're really going to love this pill. And the doctor gives them the pill and they get better, only later to find out that the pill was really nothing more than sugar or chalk, that there wasn't anything in there except for the belief. And it's interesting because it's now found that the minimum 35 to 40% of any drug's action is directly related to the placebo effect. And what to me is very interesting is while the drug companies actually want to eliminate the placebo effect, I'm still really questioning as to why aren't we enhancing the placebo effect? Why don't we leverage our perception to work with us and to heal us rather than trying to fake ourselves out? Change our belief systems is what it's all about. And interesting, while the placebo effect represents an example of a positive belief that leads to a positive conclusion, there's an also equally powerful but oppositely directed effect called the nocebo effect. The nocebo effect is when someone tells you something bad news or some limitation that all of a sudden becomes yours because they told you that. And when you start to recognize that is, well, good news can heal you, bad news can make you sick. People can actually die just because of the belief of bad news. People can generate issues of physiology that are not really manifest for any other reason than their belief system because they expect to. And all of a sudden, we start to really dabble into what is powerful in the world that we live in. Is it the physical machine? Is it the biochemistry, the genes, as the medical profession would have us believe, especially as the drug company would have us believe, because they sell us drugs to fix up who we are? And yet the reality is the new biology says it's completely different than anything we ever thought before, because we are not a genetic automaton. We are a device controlled by perception, and we control perception. And by doing that, we can control the lives that we have. Today we live in a world that is on the brink of destruction. There are crises in every area of the world that we look at. Healthcare, people, governments, the ecology, everything is in a strange upheaval. And it turns out the scientists have recognized that the extinction that we are facing on the world right now is not due to anything other but our human behavior. And basically it says, for us to survive, we have to change our behavior. I personally am very familiar with this because having been there in the 1970s and starting to recognize that the conventional belief of genes controlling life was really wrong, that environment was important, I started to recognize that if I changed my perception of the environment, that I would change the life I lead. And it's interesting because I sit here today telling you this information only from the enthusiasm of a guy who has experienced it. My life was nothing that I would have loved to claim before, and yet today, at this very moment, I sit here talking to you, telling you, if there is a heaven, I firmly believe it is here on this planet right now, because the life that I am leading with my new perceptions of the fact that the universe supports me and loves me, and I find that in the community of life, I now have a completely different life on this planet. I didn't take any drugs or chemicals for this. It was basically an understanding of changing our perceptions, our beliefs about life. It's belief that is powerful. I wasn't raised in the Christian tradition, and yet I refer back to the master teacher Jesus, and he was the man who said you could renew your life with your beliefs. I fully see that now as a scientific fact, and it's important because he said you can do all of the miracles that he could do, even better than he can do, but he said you didn't believe. And that, again, is the truth. So what I leave you with is a little piece of advice, and you hope you will follow it, and that is, recognize this. The world fully supports who we are. If there are any problems, it's usually acquired from other people who had put us down and taken away power from us. That you are fully powerful to do all the miracles that Jesus talked about, but you have to believe so. To believe so, you have to find out what programs in your subconscious mind are not supporting you and begin to change those programs into programs that encourage your vitality, your health, your life, your prosperity, and your love on this beautiful planet called Earth. Thank you.
This concludes The Biology of Belief with Dr. Bruce Lipton. Music by Stephen McNamara. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.